You're listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Kamajis, a licensed clinical social worker with a multi-state online therapy practice. I have a passion for empowering women and mom therapists to break free of the fear, overwhelm, and oppressive systems that hold them back from taking action and building the private practice of their dreams. My goal is for you to boldly believe in yourself as a clinician and business owner. If you're looking for a place to learn practice building strategy and skill while also claiming your own power as a woman and a therapist, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Welcome to this week's episode of the Raise to Empower podcast. From the beginning of this show, I've been committed to producing episodes that help listeners to build and grow their practices, but also to help examine and explore topics that allow us to fight oppressive systems that impact us as women and moms. And so I'm so excited for my conversation with today's guest, because we're going to be diving into exploring the expectations we hold of ourselves in both motherhood and womanhood. My guest today is Catherine Queering. She is a licensed mental health counselor, self-trust coach, reformed people pleaser, and neurodivergent ex-evangelical. She helps people who feel and care deeply to reconnect to their inner wisdom, heal from their pressures and traumas they've experienced, reclaim their playfulness, and liberate through collective care. Outside of work, Catherine is an avid podcast listener, book lover, especially magical realism, and parent to two amazing kids who invite her into the adventure of everyday life, and partner to a very tall husband who makes her laugh and helps her rest. Catherine, thanks so much for being here today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ashley. It's such a pleasure being here with you.
Listeners of this show know that I always ask first-time guests to kind of share how you got into therapy, because I think it's really interesting the similarities that so many of our stories have, yet differences, and also where we may present very differently in our approaches or in how we work with clients, that a lot of us have, I think, more in common than we do different. So share with us a little bit, how did you say, like, I want to be a therapist? I want to go into this world of mental health.
Yeah. So I didn't know that until maybe my mid-20s. I knew as a young kid that I loved books, as I mentioned, and I loved stories, and especially getting insight into people's inner worlds.
Yeah.
And I realize now as an adult and exploring my own like neurotype and neurodivergence, I live in my inner world. Like I am so aware of my inner world, and not everyone is, obviously, which I didn't know at the time. And so reading stories where I could get insight into people's inner narrator, their inner world, their inner motivations, that kind of thing was always so entrancing and enthralling to me throughout my whole life. And then when I was in college, I had my first introduction to the social sciences, and I fell in love with the social sciences. I studied sociology mainly at that time. Psychology didn't feel like the right fit for me at that point. And then I went on to be a foster care caseworker and loved it. But in the process of doing that, I was like, after a while, I was like, okay, I'm sending people off to get help from all these other people. I want to be the one doing that, like, deeper help.
Yeah.
And so that's what sent me to get my master's in clinical psychology. And that personally was the beginning of my ability to do inner work and explore my shadow and like understand some of the family dynamics and systems and inner systems and workings and things that has helped me with my own growth and healing and liberation. So that's how I got into doing therapy, and then kind of honed, you know, what kind of things I'm particularly interested in, and just love growing and learning. And it's just a constant passion of mine.
Well, and I love what you're talking about as far as like that inner narrative and that, like, how that shows up in clients and what their inner narrative is. And I think you're right. It really is. It's storytelling, and it's what is the story we're internally telling ourselves, but then also what is the story of other people's narratives that is being told to us about like what our narrative should be or what it's supposed to be. And so we're definitely going to be getting into all of that and how that plays into us in motherhood and womanhood. But you're right. Like it is, it's about storytelling. And I think it is fascinating to get to journey with other people as they explore their stories and their narratives.
Right. And even the sense of it's not just happening to me, but I get to be a co-creator of my own narrative around my life. Right.
Yeah.
And how I tell the story to myself, how I understand it, what the meta narrative is like.
Yeah.
That I get to be the protagonist and not just a side character that things happen to, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many great things that can happen around that.
Yeah. So one of the things we're going to be talking about today is being able to trust ourselves and know ourselves, know that we are enough, that we can, that we do enough, we have enough. And part of that, as you and I were preparing for the show, was to be kind of exploring this idea of kind of like decolonizing, you know, these expectations of ourselves in womanhood and motherhood. And so for listeners who maybe they've heard this idea of decolonizing, I know it's become the word in of itself be more popular probably the last 5, 6, 7 years. And it has come up in the sense of like, how do we decolonize the therapy room? But for those who may be like, I've heard this idea, but I don't really know what it is or understand it, can you share with listeners what that means?
Sure. I'm actually going to read a definition from Decolonizing Therapy by Jennifer Mullen. Because, and I highly recommend this book. It's amazing. She says, decolonizing therapy is a deeply intimate process of returning to the root of all things, confronting the multi-generational impact of colonization and recentering a collective healing process for all Indigenous peoples globally, including the descendants of Indigenous peoples. And she goes into more about that, but I just always like to center the voices of global majority people. And because I'm a white person, and decolonizing is more than just mindset, it's also really taking into account the harm that's been done by taking land away from people and the real sociological, emotional, financial, like so many more that I can't even figure out how to name right now, impacts of that. And that's affected all of us. And the messages that we are given and we are taught teach us how to be colonizers, basically, as the, I don't know, white minority now. And I know that was true for me, especially. That's been a helpful insight into processing like my own religious upbringing and why it felt so bad was the part that felt like I had to be a colonizer to myself and that I had to, and we can get into more of that later. I don't want to get too distracted here, but decolonizing is about beliefs. It's about inner work. It's about how you trust yourself, how you relate to others. It is all those things, but we can't just separate that and say, because then that's white people saying like, oh, okay, here, let's take this idea and make it ours without centering the other voices. So I think that's the kind of tricky piece of that. It has helped me to read about and like pretty much have a list in my head of white supremacy values and beliefs and pressures. Yeah. And that's a lot of what I bring into the therapy room. I end up seeing a lot of white clients, I think because they feel comfortable with me and as a white person. And, you know, often I will hear them express the pressures that they're experiencing and then how their internal voices keep telling them that, right? Like the voices that come in as a critics and say, well, you're lazy or you're stupid or you're not working hard enough or all those things that we've heard that have been these external pressures we've experienced from specific people or just from society in general. And the way I bring decolonizing into therapy in that sense the most often is just that message that you have is upholding a colonial empirical mindset, right? Mm. Like, it's not serving the culture, it's not serving people. And so it doesn't have to be something you have to listen to, right? Like, mm. if you know where that message comes from, then it's a lot easier to release it instead sure. of, oh, everybody else has this all figured out. I need to be perfect too, or I need to compare myself to them. I'm like, well, this yeah. standard that they're upholding is actually like yeah. a colonial mindset, right? That's having to marginalize, having to put people down in order to maintain that.
Yeah. And
like perfectionism is like a main white supremacy factor, that like holding yourself to this perfectionist standard is both really causing suffering for you yeah. and it perpetuates suffering in our society.
Yeah.
So there's even more reason to get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because some of what you're saying, like, I've never like connected some of those dots, but like what you're talking about, you know, these ideas and how they are part of, you know, either white supremacy, you know, beliefs, or even just like the colonization of society. But that this idea of the internal narrative of I'm not working hard enough, or yeah. like I have to be doing more, right? That what gets ascribed, you know, so often in our society to the people who are struggling, well, they're not working hard enough. If you right. just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you could do it, right? You shouldn't be spending your money on this. You just got to work harder. I did it. You should be able to do it, right? And that right. you're right. Yes. It's so rooted in this sense, almost this like sense of entitlement, or like right. I suffered, therefore you need to suffer in order right. to go through this too. Right. And I think a lot of times we do see in society, in culture, that idea of, well, they're lazy, and I'm putting that in quotes, mm-hmm. or, you know, they're not hard workers. Who more than often does that get ascribed to? It's people of color, mm-hmm. right? We're right. recording this episode the week before the election. So when this episode comes out, we don't know what the outcome is at this point, and how stuff will play out over the next few weeks. But we so often hear from, you know, the MAGA, right, extreme mm-hmm. right wing groups, again, of lazy, and talking about immigrants, and talking right. about, you know, not, you know, hurting of society
right.
versus right. like stuff was just handed to you, and not recognizing, again, like the implications of what you're saying and calling somebody lazy or saying you're right. not working hard enough. And so then, yeah, right. what are we internalizing ourselves as women when we're hearing that, right. As society? Just, yeah, it's just interesting.
Right. And that you can unlearn and decondition that for yourself, right? Mm. And so you don't have to be punishing yourself with guilt or shame.
Yeah.
Either. Right. Like,
yeah.
those aren't helpful learning tools, and self-compassion is much more helpful.
Yeah.
And is going to help you and help society a yeah. lot more. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, you know, when you're kind of exploring that narrative inside of, you know, this sense of, well, I'm, you know, I'm just not working hard enough, or I'm lazy, or I'm not good enough. And that the sense that other people have it together.
Right.
What I think is so interesting, I primarily work with women in my practice, and a lot of them are white women, but it is a common narrative, this sense of, I don't have it all together, but this belief that everybody else does. Whereas yeah. if everybody talked to one another, they'd be like,
right.
who here doesn't have it all together? And everybody would be raising their hand. Right. And,
yeah.
but it's, we internalize that story of that somehow I am less than, and everybody else is perfect. Right. I'm striving right. for this perfection, but everybody else somehow has it all together.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if I'm getting the term right. I think it was effortless perfection. I've been listening to Brené Brown's podcast, Unlocking Us, a lot recently.
Yeah.
And her episode with Susan Cain. Susan was talking about her time at Princeton, and that there was actually this word or effortless perfection or whatever that was, that you had to appear like you had it all together and appear like it was easy, right? Yeah. And that is a huge part of United States culture and the expectation in order to be successful, appear successful, that kind of thing, right? And so then we have to mask or hide or repress anything that is mental health issues, struggles, even just the regular pain and limitations of being human, right? We're not allowed to listen to those or let those live inside of this and have space to breathe and space to be cared for. And she was talking about how, you know, everyone was living in this, and then so everyone seems fine, and then 2 days later somebody commits suicide, right? Like, and you never know. And that's the most extreme example of how painful it is inside when what you're showing outside is this perfection and this image, right? Because that's so much of what our society is built on, and we're conditioned to try to show in order to be successful, right?
Yeah.
And different generations, I think, had different pressures and priorities and values around that, right? Some are like the work ethic. Some is you have to appear wealthy. Some is you have to not be wealthy, but have enough money, you know, or like this effortless perfection, or all the college degrees or whatever the thing is that you have to show to show you're the expert or the certain subset of society or whatever that is, right?
Yeah. Well, and as you were talking, it made me think of motherhood, because I feel like this idea of effortless perfection is pervasive in our society when it comes to motherhood. And I do think social media plays a part of that, but also just ideas and beliefs around what motherhood is supposed to be like. In my private practice, I specialize in working with women with perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. And the amount of shame that comes from the struggle in motherhood or the struggle with postpartum anxiety or postpartum depression is not necessarily fueled because of like that own person's shame, but it's the sense of, what do others think of me? Like, if people knew what I was thinking, or if people knew how much I was struggling, what are they going to think of me? Or what are they going to say of me? And so then there's a minimization of my experience or of somebody's experience. And, you know, again, because of this idea of like effortless perfection, I was reading an article yesterday about someone who experienced postpartum psychosis, and it's a very intense diagnosis and very intense experience, but that there's a belief that a lot of times it's not getting it reported as maybe as commonly as it's being experienced, because there is so much sense of shame. What if somebody knew what I was thinking or how bad I was struggling? And I do think that those mindsets, again, it's connected to that sense of effortless perfection, but also this sense of shame and judgment, that it's not just like, I'm afraid people will think this about me, but people will think this about me. Our society is so judgmental.
It really is dangerous.
Yes.
Right? It really is socially dangerous. You will be isolated. You will be further shamed.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. It's not just a belief. Yeah. But people will do that. May not be people that you know, but people will believe that. And so, it's hard to then be able to say, no, I am struggling with whatever it may be, because what are people going to think? And like, there's a real concern around what are people going to think. It's a real, it's a real problem.
Yeah. Right. So I think it helps me to think about, as a therapist, you know, I end up working one-on-one a lot. And also, how do I living my life, and how do I helping my clients find spaces where, and expand those spaces where people can be more real, that they can know that they can show some amount of limitation or humanness or weakness to themselves and to other people. And like, when and how do you know that's safe? When and how do you know that's accepted, so that you can unburden that? So you can have some witnessing and some like somebody to help bear that burden. And
sure.
Yeah, I'm not a very, I was going to say social person, but that's not the right word. Like fitting into the social groups or like that being important, that's never been that important to me. And I've always been on the margins. And I think now I'm realizing it's because of my neurodivergence. And I've always been like, I don't necessarily want to fit in. I want to be connected, but I don't want to be put in a box, and I don't want to have to follow somebody else's like social rules to like, or put people down in order to, or exclude them in order to be accepted. But I know as a kid, I didn't know how to create the spaces. I just knew how to be that person. And like this year, I've been trying to create a group around, especially for empaths and people who are deep feelers and thinkers, to have a community to have space around that. So I called it empathic change makers, of like, how do we create this change and be the change by giving ourselves space to not have to follow these rules and these pressures, right?
Yeah.
And be able to be real with ourselves and be strategic about where and how we show that.
Are you a mental health practitioner looking to streamline your administrative tasks and get rid of the overwhelm of running your practice? Look no further than Simple Practice, the electronic health record designed with you in mind. Simple Practice isn't just another electronic health record. It's your secret weapon for simplifying the chaos. From scheduling appointments to billing and beyond, Simple Practice has everything you need to run your practice efficiently and effectively. With Simple Practice, you can finally reclaim your time and focus on what truly matters, your clients and your family. Gone are the days of scrambling to manage appointments and billing. Simple Practice handles it all seamlessly, so you can spend less time stressing and more time connecting. With Simple Practice, you can schedule appointments with ease, send automated appointment reminders to reduce no-shows, and even conduct secure video sessions all within one platform. Plus, their HIPAA-compliant telehealth feature ensures that your client's privacy is always protected. Simple Practice also streamlines your billing process, allowing you to create and send professional invoices, accept credit card payments, and even submit insurance claims all with just a few clicks. Simple Practice has designed their platform to be intuitive and easy to use because they know that your time is precious and every moment counts. So whether you're squeezing in clients between school pickups and sports practices or catching up on paperwork during nap time, Simple Practice has your back. Join the ranks of empowered women and mom therapists who are revolutionizing their practice with Simple Practice. Ready to streamline your practice and simplify your life? Head over to bit.ly/AshleySimplePractice to start your 30-day free trial and get up to $200 off your paid subscription. Trust me, you won't know how you ever lived without it. We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/compconnecting. One of the things I see in my work with women and moms who are like starting out in private practice is that part, like you were just talking about, of kind of being able to trust ourselves and feeling like I'm trying to follow all the rules, or I have to do it the right way. And that there's like this fear around, like, what if I do something wrong? And what if other people, what are other people going to think? What are they going to say? What are they going to do? And I know that's not unique just to women therapists, but I see it a lot in our profession.
Right.
And so I'm curious, What do you see as some of the biggest barriers for us as women in being able to trust ourselves?
I think it's that sense that you were saying of like, you were describing all these outward things that we have to attune to or pay attention to be accepted or play the game or do the right things to be accepted and as a parent. And it takes creating enough safety to be aware of that without attuned to it and attuning to yourself instead, right? Like, what happens if I can start with, what do I want for myself and my kids? What do I want for them? What makes me feel alive? When do I see my kids come alive, right? Like, what helps us feel awake and alive and impassioned and connected? And can we pursue that? Right? Can that be our priority? And we can be aware of these other expectations and these other like rules for how to succeed in quotes, right? In society and financially and successfully in the world as your kids grow up, and prioritize tuning into what's best for you, right? And that's how you set boundaries too. That's how you know, I can say yes to this thing or no to this thing. I can listen to myself and emote and express my feelings rather than having to hide them and mask them all the time and find enough safe space to do that. So that's one little answer to that. There might be more we could delve into.
Well, and I'm sure I'd be really curious where this originates from, but I feel like there's somewhere, whether it's in society or in colonization, but this sense of like, we can't trust ourselves as women. Like, you know, how many clients I've had come in and be like, you know, I'm really struggling, but maybe it's not as bad as I think it is. Like, maybe it's not as, you know, maybe it really isn't as bad. Like, I'm struggling, and it feels really hard, but maybe, you know, I'm just making it up, right? Versus like, can it just be that you are struggling? Like, why do we have to minimize self out of this belief that like others may have it worse almost? And so I shouldn't feel as bad as I do. In reality, you feel bad or you're struggling or you're suffering. Right. And it's okay that you are, but it feels like there's this belief that we have so much as women in that like we can't trust ourselves, which is just so sad, because who is more connected to ourself than us?
Right. The short answer is patriarchy. And the conditioning around that. And I mean, who knows the intricacies exactly of how that develops, right? It's no one person that wants to control women, you know, it's not like men want to control women necessarily, but, there is this conditioning and all these beliefs wrapped around that. And so this very real fear that if I own my power, if I really listen to myself, if I am not making myself smaller, right? What would happen?
Yeah.
What am I worried about inside? What am I worried about outside? Right? Am I afraid I would be too big? That then I'd get they're too much. They're intimidating. They're whatever, right? Like, what am I afraid of that might happen? What might happen inside? Oh, no, like this fear comes up, right? Or this other expectation or something.
Yeah.
Well, we need to work with that part of you to see what we can do to help your parts work as a team.
Yeah.
To feel like you can have your power and strategically, like, how do you stand in that in society?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because these fears are very real.
Well, and one of the questions I think I like to ask, and I ask this specifically, like when I'm working with therapists who are building a practice, because there is so much of that self-doubt. There is so much of that. Can I do this? Am I allowed to do this? But that like, whose voice is that? That's telling you can't do that, right? Like, whose voice is saying you're not allowed, or who are you like trying to get permission from to make this happen? Because I think like that question of, you know, okay, if you're figuring out that narrative, like there's this fear of like, am I going to be too much? But where does that idea come from? Like, who has told you that you're too much, or that it's, you know, you're not allowed to be bigger in this space than you are? And so, yeah, that it's the threads that run through all of this that I think can, I mean, go back to childhood, right? That like, you know, how many of us as little girls were told, oh, you know, she's the talker, or she's the busybody, or she's the bossy one, right? And so that stays with you. And I don't want to be the bossy one, right? But like, what little boy is told he's bossy?
Right.
Like, you don't really hear that told to little boys, right? They're assertive. Exactly. They're like a leader. And so, yeah, like, just, I don't know. I picture like this, like, ball of yarn where it's like pulling out threads that like to untangle that knot.
Right. Well, and that's why I think it's helpful to think in terms of culture and people that have influenced that, right? And the pressures that those people have experienced in culture, right? Because it might be a specific person's voice. Oh, that sounds like my mom or my dad or this boy at school or whatever, right? Or this group of kids at school. And why did they say that? Yeah. What pressures were they experiencing? What beliefs, cultural beliefs, beliefs that they got from their parents that they're reacting to would create or cause that?
Yeah. Or what perceived threat were you in that moment or that they were perceiving in that moment?
I know I at some point identified that I had a lot of like have to's inside. You know, we think about these like limited thinking patterns or these like words or phrases that have so much emotional oomph or power inside. Yeah. And for me, it was have to without any like knowing why. And I think a lot of it was like these bigger societal things. It wasn't a specific voice from a person. And so it was working with the, can I shift the have to I want to, or I will, or I don't want to. And I actually wrote a poem about it that's in my book. If you want, I can read it, but that's an option. I've worked a lot with the have to, and I do that with clients a lot too, right? Of like, what are these places where we get stuck in this?
I use with clients shoulds and like we're shoulding ourselves, right? Yes.
That like that was the first thing for me too.
Yes, like shoulding versus coulding, and that just like the ability to shift that word. I always say like it goes from like a tightly gripped fist to like this open hand of possibilities, that it doesn't have to be this one specific thing,
right?
Whatever, again, in whatever context,
and agency back, right?
Yeah,
and then speaking to our kids that way and not passing on these pressures to our kids, right? Yeah. Like we're feeling pressure to have our kids do all these activities, right? To fit in with the other kids or to show up at this event and our kids be really quiet and polite and like act a certain way, right? Or else we'll feel embarrassed by the other parents or whatever that is. And like, how can we address that without putting that pressure on the kids?
Right. And that's hard as parents, because you talk about like feeling judged. Other parents can be some of the most judgmental towards our own parenting and our experiences. And then you add in like the sense of like, what are our previous generations, our parents, grandparents, you know, also contributing to those expectations of what we think we're supposed to be, or we should be, or we have to be.
Right. Yeah. And they're all outward based, right? They're all external. Their image, their behaviors, they never incorporate what's happening internally for us, which is where our emotional health, our mental health, our psychological health reside.
Yeah.
Right. And our personhood and our stories about ourselves. And like, we need that to be prioritized in order for us to be healthy.
Are there things, you know, I know it's not like a flip a switch. There's like two little things that you do to make this better, but are there key things that you think can be really helpful in being able to move from that place of like questioning ourselves and doubting ourselves to that place of being able to kind of like embrace who we are or the choices we're making or celebrating the parts of ourselves that maybe we've experienced shame around, or again, questioning around the have-tos, the shoulds, or am I good enough there? how can we move from that place of doubt to a place of celebration and embracing?
Yeah, I think, I mean, one, I'm going to say is a CBT thing, right? Of just changing the shoulds to I can.
Yeah.
And with that, you can take realistic assessment of like how much this might affect me or be dangerous or, you know, a threat emotionally or socially or whatever that is. And decide, oh yeah, this is important for me, but I don't have to, right? So shifting that. And then I'm a big internal family systems person. And so I think my next layer or level would be that of like the parts of us that are trying to protect us by upholding these beliefs or reminding us of these beliefs and pressures. They're doing that to try to keep us safe. But the way they're doing that is causing more pain and pressure and self-sabotage and all of that. So can we listen to the fears of these protector parts and see what do they need to know that we're older and that we do have more choices and work with us?
Yeah.
Right. To work as a team internally to be like, okay, can we go back and heal the first time we had this pain and bring that exile out? Can we find another way to feel safe that's strategic?
Yeah.
But where you can all have all the space you need inside of me. Right. Mm. And then in the safe places, let that out externally as well.
Yeah. Well, and to that point, that just also made me think of just the importance of community. And I know you talked a little bit about the community that you're building, but just being able to find those safe places, whether it is a person or a group or a place, to be able to let those parts out and even let those doubts out that others can then, you know, if we're not strong enough in those moments to like believe, you know, or embrace those parts of ourselves or celebrate them, that there are other people there that can help to do that. Because I think, I believe part of what continues to keep us, you know, in some of these patriarchal beliefs and, you know, colonizing, you know, ideas is our quietness or is our isolation. As we're able to start talking and saying like, hey, I have struggled with this, or hey, this is a part of me that I don't know what to do with, and other, and somebody else is able to say, hey, me too, or hey, yes, like I'm in that with you, that shame starts to lessen and collective healing can happen. And, you know, being able to not suffer in silence, I think it is really, really powerful. So I love what you're doing and building a community that is a safe place for people who, like you said, are empaths or maybe, you know, have a sense of it's not safe for me to be who I am or open in these ways in other areas, but this is a collective place for me to be able to just be myself.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think in general, empaths, like you can't meet society's standards for things because you're just the emotional boundaries are too porous. Like we just feel everybody's feelings. So it's hard to be around that many people that much.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at least for me and the other empaths I've met, we tend to see or feel the shadow side of like what people are hiding. And I'm just so not interested in the mask.
Yeah.
And I can feel there's a dichotomy there. I'm like, just let me get to that part. So finding other people that want to operate on that level in a caring, honest way is so important, I think, for our well-being and creating more and more of that.
Yeah.
And being okay with that other space may not fit for me, or I may never like fit in or have that level of whatever with that. You know, I've been exploring a lot of my empathic qualities and high sensitivity, I think, are under the umbrella of autism now. But I know some people are like, empath feels like a separate neurotype to me, but it is a neurotype. It is a body nervous system type that has different strengths and limitations. And so it is in that sense.
Yeah.
Like, can we reassess the conditioning that I should be this type of therapist or mother or whatever, understanding my own needs and honoring that. I mean, one of my podcast is called Who We Are and What We Need, because I think for me, one of my passions is centering, like we do as therapists, our human needs and well-being. And then if we can create society based on that,
yeah,
right, versus this, you know, standard of normal and success, right?
Yeah.
Like we start with wisdom and meeting needs and community and what makes us feel alive.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's going to be good for everyone.
Right. Can you share a little bit about your masterclass that you have in being able to trust yourself? Because I know that's something that listeners will be able to kind of access in our show notes. So can you share a little bit about what that is and who that might benefit?
Yeah. So it is just a short video and worksheet. I called it a masterclass because I think it's like hits on the really important fundamentals, but it is short and sweet. It's a mini masterclass. Like, how do you start tuning into your own interoception? How do you start attuning to yourself rather than these outside pressures and standards and obligations and voices and even like your own inner narrative voices, right? But like the real center of who you are and what your body is saying, what your emotions are saying, and retune into that and what that feels like, and start getting a feeling in your body of that shift. And then start from that to keep building that. Once you have that bodily sense of what that feels like, you can feel yourself clicking into that.
Yeah.
Right. Versus being outside of that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what that's for.
Mm-hmm. And so that's a great place, it sounds like, probably for people to kind of go to start exploring this, you know, idea of like, I don't trust myself, or maybe there's parts of myself that I don't trust. How can I work on that? That would be a great tool, it sounds like, for them to go check out.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about your podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. I have had so much fun doing this podcast. I'm on my second season right now. And I've just been trying to explore people's experience and voices of who they are and what they need, and expand our understanding of, you know, I specifically look for who we are and what we need of like other people who are deep feelers and thinkers and empaths, neurotypes, personalities, spiritual seekers, shadow work, like any of that, that encompasses this deep soul layer of being, and how do we live well and in society knowing that. But there's a plethora of different like things that I've explored around that with people that's been really exciting. And what are the medicines that we bring, right? What are our gifts and our passions and our medicines, and what does interconnection look like when we're living in that space? And what does society look like, and how do we create that?
Well, and we'll have a link in the show notes to your show and all of that. If listeners are interested in learning more about your work and connecting with you, where's the best place for them to do that?
My website, katherinequerian.com, will have everything. And I'm fairly active on Instagram, which is at Katherine Queering, and on Substack, which is, you can find it under Katherine Queering, and it's Coming Home to Ourselves.
And we'll again have all that linked in the show notes. Katherine, I really enjoyed our conversation here today, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be here and share of yourself with our listeners. So thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks, Ashley. It's been great.
Thank you so much for listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. Check the show notes for all links and resources mentioned in the show. If you found today's episode helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with your therapist friends. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave your 5-star rating and review. It truly means so much to me and will help us get our message of empowerment out to other women and mom clinicians. And I'd love to connect with you in our Facebook community. So check out the show notes for the link, or head to bit.ly/raise to empower to join us. I'll see you back here next week.